The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
But we want to start in Europe, because all around Europe, the battle against COVID-19 is accelerating. And of course, the race to get a virus on time for everybody is also advancing apace. We're joined by three correspondents on the line now. First of all, we'll go to Deutsche Welle political and security correspondent Thomas Sparrow. Thomas, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Tell me, first of all, the situation in terms of lockdown. Is Germany going into more stringent lockdown in terms of curfews and more closures?
There's actually a meeting today between the German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Germany's 16 regional leaders to try and decide precisely that. If you look at some of the numbers are indeed slightly going down. If you look, for example, at new cases or at the seven-day caseload. But there is a lot of concern here in Germany among politicians, specifically about those variants that have been found and what that could mean for the caseload here in Germany. And that's why the discussion now in this country is not about easing restrictions. On the contrary, it's about tightening them further.
In what way might these restrictions be tightened further? Because last we heard, Germany was in quite a severe lockdown. And I know that it's a country made up of a federation of states. So the states may have different rules. But how might things be tightened further?
You mentioned this very important point, because it is the case that Germany as a federal country has different rules in place for different regions, depending on how badly affected they are. But that's why, for example, Chancellor Angela Merkel and the different regions have been trying to meet on a regular basis to try and find at least common points, common areas where they can all work on. And Germany is indeed in what has been described as a hard lockdown. Shops here are closed, except essential shops, restaurants, bars, museums are also closed. But numbers haven't gone down as much as authorities would have liked to. And that's why now the discussion is on whether to impose curfews, whether to make home working compulsory, obligatory, whether contact rules should be tightened even further. Now, for example, one household can meet one further person privately, but there are discussions here as to whether that should go even further. It is unclear whether they will agree to all of this in particular, because, as I mentioned, some of those numbers are decreasing in the way that German authorities want to, very slowly, but they are decreasing. So you can imagine that today there will be a big discussion between different leaders as to what the course of action should be in the next few weeks.
Now, there are some proposals to punish people who have been a close contact of a COVID-infected person and refuse to obey the quarantine rules.
Well, those are all discussions here in Germany, because one thing that authorities have also understood and they have also seen is that there's a sense of coronavirus vaccine. This is something very evident. And in fact, in some cases, you could say that people are not necessarily complying with some of those rules, like staying at home, trying to work as much from home, trying to avoid going out if at all necessary. You still see, for example, buses or metros full at peak time. So that's why probably some of those discussions are being carried out as to what could be done to make people actually comply with those rules and regulations that are put in place, not only locally and regionally, but at a federal level as well. So there's, on the one hand, all the analysis about the numbers and what can be done to bring them down and the COVID variants. But on the other hand, there is a big discussion here as to what could be done to make people comply and understand that this is indeed a very serious issue. There is, as I mentioned, a sense of coronavirus fatigue in the country now.
Yeah. Now, there is also the power that they have under the Disease Protection Act to actually detain people who breach the rules. Isn't that so?
Well, they could detain people who breach the rules. They could fine people who breach the rules. And that is something that authorities have also stressed in the past, that authorities, in particular police, will be making sure that people, for example, wear the masks if necessary, that they do comply with quarantine regulations, that they do have the tests when they need to, and so on. And that's why this is a very serious issue here in Germany. It's not only about imposing new measures, it's also about making sure that people comply with them as well.
The question of a vaccine mandate, saying to people, you must be vaccinated, is that being discussed?
That's out of the question. Authorities here, in particular the federal government, have stressed time and time and time again that vaccinations will be voluntary, that there will be no compulsory vaccines here for people in this country. That has to do with the fact that there is a big discussion in general, not only about coronavirus, but in general about vaccines. And that's why authorities have said they will offer all vaccines that are necessary for people in Germany who want to have the vaccine, but it will not be compulsory in Germany. Every time they get this question asked, the federal minister for health or the chancellor say that it will not be, that it will only be in a voluntary basis.
The rollout of the vaccine, obviously it was a bit slower than it was in Denmark. Some criticism in our own country of how slowly it started, but it seems to be trudging along with the availability of vaccine supplies. How is it going in Germany?
Also relatively slowly, although in the last few days, Germany did mark an important number, the fact that over 1 million people have received the first doses of the vaccine. But if you judge by what the different regions have been saying, there is certainly criticism as to how this distribution has been carried out. Not only the fact that it's been happening too slowly, judging by what some regions have been saying, but also that they're not receiving enough doses. This is something that could certainly start to change now that you don't only have the BioNTech Pfizer vaccine, but also the Moderna vaccine. And that's something that authorities have stressed as an important development that will maybe ease some of these problems that German officials saw at the beginning. Germany's health minister did stress that it was well known in advance that the beginning of the vaccination program would be difficult, that it wouldn't be simply straightforward, but that with time, as new vaccines would be approved by the European agency, as the rollout would be further developed here in Germany, then everyone who really wants that vaccine will be able to get it.
Now, Germany was part of the Common Vaccine Purchasing Programme organised within the EU, and that was fine. But then Germany decided to go it alone and buy extra supplies itself, which has brought some criticism of Germany, certainly in this country. What did they say? What did Angela Merkel say about that extra purchasing in breach, if you like, of the solidarity with the EU?
That has certainly been a very big topic of discussion in this country. You mentioned already that in other parts of the EU, there has been a lot of criticism as to why Germany went or at least made that decision to purchase further vaccine doses, even more than what had already been agreed on a European level. When you've asked European officials or German officials in particular about this case, they have stressed that they have focused mostly on a European approach to that, that they certainly did not intend to have any type of vaccine nationalism, and that on the contrary, what they had been trying to do from the start was to make sure that all purchases of vaccines were carried out through the European Commission and not on a national level, and that's something that they had been trying to do right from the start. However, it is important what you mentioned. This is something that has been very controversial here in Germany, also very controversial in other parts of Europe, with other countries criticizing the fact that Germany decided to buy doses separately, apart from those that were agreed jointly by the European Commission.
What is the attitude to Ireland, given that we were and possibly still are, we have the highest infection rate at the moment in Europe? Has Germany made any provisions with regard to travel to and from Ireland?
In general, there are provisions when it comes to travelling from other countries here in Germany. That's something that leaders agreed when they met last time. I'm talking here about the German Chancellor and regional leaders. They realize that traveling is certainly one very big area of concern, and that's why further provisions were made in general. If you look specifically at the Irish case, that is actually one of the reasons why they're meeting today to decide and at least discuss some further measures, because they clearly see how the situation has developed in Ireland and the risk that there is when you have these new variants. And that's also why, for example, very clearly Angela Merkel said that the goal here is to avoid having very big problems caused by variants. And I would just like to add, now that I'm mentioning the variants, that a new COVID variant was found in Bavaria just a couple of days ago. It is different from the one that was found originally in the UK, and doctors still do not know if it's highly contagious, but this just adds another level of concern to the discussions that are being carried out today here in Berlin.
Yeah. I mean, there was some annoyance in Britain, I think, that the variant, which was isolated originally in the UK, was being known as the British variant or the UK variant in Germany. And they felt that they were being labelled unfairly. But I presume the variant found in Bavaria will become known as the Bavarian variant. So there we are. Thank you very much for joining us. Thomas Sparrow, Deutsche Welle political and security correspondent. We'll go to Spain and Graeme Keighley, Spain correspondent for The Independent. Graeme, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, are variants a hot topic in Spain?
Not really. What's the hot topic is basically the curfew. Basically, tomorrow, the regions, 17 regions, are going to meet with the government to decide whether they can bring forward the national curfew. Spain, I should tell you, has been in a state of emergency since November, but with case loads rising, a number of regions have requested to bring the curfew, which is generally 11 o'clock forward. And there was a proposal from a region in the north, Castilla-León, to bring it forward to 8 p.m. in the evening. However, the central government said that legally they can't do this and it should stay at 10 p.m. So there's a row over this at the moment, and it we shall see tomorrow what they work out. Mm. The background, of course, is that the caseload is going up, hospitals are filling up, and there is this is the main concern at the moment.
Now, the impact of the curfew, whether it's at 10 or 11 or ultimately at 8 o'clock in the evening, what does that mean? Does it mean literally empty streets? And if you are out and about, what kind of a permit do you have to have?
You have to have a permit which would give you a good reason to travel for work or for a hospital appointment or to go and get food. You have to demonstrate that you're going to get food or for to go and deal with legal documents. That's another category of the permits. So these are the reasons that you can come out after the curfew. And the idea is to stop people mixing in bars, restaurants and those kind of things. Obviously, that's where the authorities feel that the problem is being accelerated.
People who do dine out of doors or rather outside their own home, would most of them have done their dining by 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock anyway? And 8 o'clock would really be a kind of a punishment saying, you know, you eat early or eat not at all or eat at home.
Well, in normal times, they would have done. Most people do dine out late. But at the moment, and again, it's different for different regions around the country. But say if you take Catalonia, for instance, the restaurants and bars are only allowed to open at lunchtime. So the streets are empty. Barcelona is a ghost town in the evenings. And in other areas, it is possible to go out, but most people would go out after 10. If this came in, if the curfew came in at 8 p.m., then most people would just stay in and the restaurants remain shut.
Mm. Now, the pressure on hospital facilities, on intensive care, how are they coping?
Well, it's new figures have come out today, actually, saying there are 23,000 people in the hospitals around the country. This is a higher number than in the second wave. And this is giving a lot of concern to the health authorities. They're saying it's much worse. Just to give you an idea of the contagion rate here, at the moment it's 689 cases per 100,000 population. That's gone up about 100 in the last week. So the pressure on the hospitals is considerable. I've come across lots of testimonies from doctors and nurses around the country saying, look, we've got to do something to relieve this. One thing that is happening is a purpose-built hospital on the outskirts of Madrid, which was specially built to treat COVID patients, is now coming into its own, if you like, to try and relieve the pressure, at least in the capital.
Now, the vaccination program, has Spain started to take delivery of supplies and to roll out a vaccination program? And how is that being done? Is it being done at local GP level, or will there be national centres?
Spain has taken delivery of the Pfizer vaccination, and also the Moderna arrived last week. It's now embarking on the second round of vaccinations. These are mainly being targeted at the regions where there was a higher number of vaccinations in the first round. The idea is to get as many people with both doses as possible. The vaccinations themselves are being carried out in local GPs' surgeries or in hospitals. I have to say that initially the program did not get off to a good start in some of the major regions like Madrid or Catalonia, but in other smaller areas it was a great success. And almost, I should mention, Asturias in the north had almost 80% of their vaccine was used, and so it's varied initially, but I have to say overall the pace of the program has improved.
The question of the Spanish economy is so dependent on tourism. What are they saying about this year's tourism year in terms of vaccination and how they might handle people who maybe are already vaccinated but who want a holiday in Spain?
Yes, well, they've already been planning for this and they are trying to encourage people to plan ahead, at least if they can, for holidays later in the year. Normally, the holiday season starts in full from May onwards and lasts until October. But realistically, the government is trying to get people to plan for holidays in the late summer. They think that that's a realistic benefit, a realistic prospect. But anything before that, coming over to Spain in Easter time, for instance, or even May or June, is not really on the cards at the moment.
All right. Well, in summary, Spain is in a state of a national emergency because of this. And just to let you know that our per 100,000 rate in this country is almost twice that of Spain, or maybe more. We're at 1410.3 per 100,000 of population. So if you're in emergency situation, in crisis, what on earth are we? Anyway, look, thank you very much for joining us from Spain. That's Graeme Keighley, Spain correspondent for The Independent. We go now to Hugo McLafferty, who's an Irish journalist living in Italy. Good morning, Hugo.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, in Italy, it appears that the collapse of a government is never far away. Is that in danger of happening now in the middle of this pandemic?
Yeah, it is. It's a real possibility. I suppose politically, Italy is on the knife edge. Conte and his government survived a vote of no confidence in the lower house yesterday evening. By comfortably, it must be said, but now they face the Senate, a vote in the Senate today. And that is predicted to be a lot closer. If they don't get it, then the coalition government has no working majority. And there'd be two options. The President Mattarella could call on a snap elections or form a government of national unity, considering that it's a crisis. And Mattarella's shown before that he is quite sensible in these matters. So that is a possibility as well.
Now, in terms of the case rate, the infection rate, Italy's a big country. What's the situation in the north, in Lombardy? What's the situation further afield?
Well, we moved to, all of Italy moved to orange, downgraded from red, and that was on Sunday. And that's promising, now, except for Lombardy and Sicily. And they're the two regions that remain on full lockdown. The numbers have been coming down slowly but consistently. But I think that this most recent emergency decree to keep Lombardy and Sicily on red is in light of the political crisis. Also because the particular variants that are around. So I think just because of the situation, they're going to err on the side of caution and just keep Lombardy especially safe and locked down.
What is the extent of that lockdown? What can you do currently, Hugo, and what can you not do?
Well, in the red zone, you can't do anything. You can, essential shops can stay are open, but everything else is closed. You're not allowed to socialize, to see anyone. So it's pretty much like as strict a lockdown as we've had. There's no freedom to move. Everybody's at home. Everybody's working from home. So as you can imagine, it's been months and months of this now. So people are quite used to it, I think, at this stage.
Yeah. And if you do go out for your shopping, are they likely to stop you and check that you have been to the shop, look at your till receipt and so on?
Yeah, you have if you leave the house at all, you have to self-certify, and there's a form that you print out and you fill it out for the reason that you're leaving the house. And I've been stopped several times going to the shops, yeah, and they will look into the back of the car and into the boot to see that you have the shopping bags, to make sure that you're not spoofing. Now you can go and visit, for example, elderly relatives who might be living alone, because obviously they don't want older people to feel to be too isolated. Mm-hmm. But otherwise they're very strict, and you do see the presence of the police on the street.
Okay, they know how to do lockdowns there. And finally, I should ask you about vaccination and how quickly they're rolling out the vaccine.
Yeah, it seems to be okay. 2 days ago, they hit the mark of 1 million vaccinations. Now, Italy has a quite robust infrastructure there of medical centres, because they have an elderly population. So it's a sort of a decentralised, away from the hospital network of medical centres. So they seem to be doing quite well. They did hit a snag with the Pfizer vaccine, which was a delay in delivery from the Pfizer side, with something to do with an upgrading facilities in Belgium. So they have paused for a couple of days, but they have been reassured that supplies will resume as normal very soon.
Okay. And are they happy they can vaccinate the bulk of the population by mid-year?
Of course, people will always complain about the rate of vaccination, but they've been true to their word and everything that they said they would do. So they have specifically targeted healthcare workers, frontline healthcare workers, and older vulnerable people in full-time care.
Okay.
And that is what they're doing. And then they'll move on from there.
All right. Well, look, thank you very much for joining us. Hugo McClafferty, an Irish journalist living in lockdown in Italy.